The best solutions in the market that I'm seeing are giving you a ground reality check, allowing you to do some sort of scenario planning. But more importantly, they're creating this bridge between the actual operations and the financial owners to communicate that this is what we need to keep our end customers happy and profitable and keep the business and people intact.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. This is the Digital Supply Chain Podcast, the number one podcast focusing on the digitization of supply chain. And I'm your host, Global Vice President at SAP, Tom Raftery. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Digital Supply Chain Podcast. My name is Tom Raftery with SAP. And with me on the show today, I have my special guest, Ali. Ali, welcome to the podcast. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi, Tom. Thanks for hosting us in Throughput on the podcast. My name is Ali Raza. I am the CEO and founder of Throughput. At Throughput, we optimize end-to-end supply chains by sensing demand changes early enough to move and make what actually sells, and have developed a concept around predictive replenishment.
Okay. So what is predictive replenishment would be the first question that would come to mind, because it's not an expression I've heard before.
Yeah, so most of the AI technologies these days are focused on computer vision defect, predictive maintenance. Predictive replenishment, the way we term it, is figuring out based off of how lead times actually impact your stocking levels and based off of the changes in demand, how to predict what to deliver on time and full down to the end location. So we've basically termed that as predictive replenishment.
Okay, very good. We're living through kind of weird times at the moment, Ali. I mean, we've had a lot of disruptions to supply chain in the last couple of years. If I were to list a few of them off, I would start with Brexit, for example, here in Europe was a big one for us. And then after that, we get into COVID, we get into the whole semiconductor thing that's going on, the ports issue, containers, the war now that's happening in Ukraine with Russia invading. You've got a bit of a history of working in disruptive supply chain environments. Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So my career actually didn't start on the IT side. Well, it may have started doing some Aspen simulations around bottleneck detection, but I worked in the oil field services side for many years, managing and doing work across 8 countries. One of my last roles was running operations for Pakistan and Yemen during the Saudi invasion. And at that time, we sort of had the opposite situation where oil was going from $150 to $60 a barrel, mm-hmm. and creating all sorts of stress in terms of, you know, keeping workers around and so forth, and making sure that the business was profitable. So supply chain disruptions like I'd never seen at the time. I think I was 27, 28. And I started realizing that a lot of the data that we had wasn't making a lot of sense. So we started looking at demand signals, looking at capacity management and inventory management from a new perspective. And by doing so, it gave us enough of a alert early enough to, you know, get rid of stuff that we didn't need, evacuate people weeks before anyone else did. So it is challenging times for many people, but in pockets around the world, there have been such incidents. And so that's sort of my background and how we've been dealing with supply chain issues. We were actually in Italy when the pandemic broke out, right? Wow. And taking care of operations there, working with customers. And so we've seen the wave, we followed the wave, we've sort of followed these supply chain disruptions from ports to ports and locations to locations. I was in Yokohama when the ship was on standby, right? So it's almost like we've been chasing fires and also chasing opportunities like booms in the building materials industry, like cement, semiconductor, as you mentioned. We might be starting work there soon. So there's an infinite amount of supply chain problems, as you know, right now.
And what's your takeaway from having lived through the experience in Yemen, for example?
Yeah, I mean, once you go through it, it's all very, it's a first time when you look at it, and you may feel that there's not a lot of planning involved. But when you look back at it, it's very systematic, right? Supply chains react as they're designed. So if you start thinking in terms of models, right, understanding what you're really capable of from a capacity perspective, from your equipment or just personnel, and how you can actually still operate profitably and deliver on time, there are opportunities to be successful in these sorts of environments and keep a calm head and continue moving forward, right? And a lot of that is enabled by data that can give you the confidence to say, even though there might be an infinite amount of things that are happening today, I know that ground realities is this is what I'm capable of doing. So a lot of that preparation came from understanding the data, understanding what we're really capable of. And that also simplified the problem in terms of deliverable. So I think it's not new. I think these are very cyclical events, right? Each industry, unfortunately, some countries have to go through this. Mm. But there's a lot of planning that can be done today that can help with the execution side of things.
And is that what Throughput is working on?
Absolutely. I think we're trying to bridge the gap, right? Typically, if you look at operations don't leverage enough IT in terms of understanding their data. Maybe they'll pull a report every quarter, some customers you work with once a year. But once you start being a little bit more proactive, understanding your sales, understanding your operations planning, and being more iterative about it, mm-hmm. you can start picking up on patterns, right? But most importantly, you understand your capabilities of your people, how to leverage them, how to do more with them, and to be successful. So I think the problem we're solving is, okay, there's a lot of operational supply chain problems, and there's a lot of data in certain spots in the supply chain, like downstream in retail, you can find lots of data. And then there's data that's not so relevant, or actually super relevant, but not as available, say, up in the tier one or tier two, or even like the raw material side of things, right? Where stuff is being blown up at the quarries and the rocks are being moved to the cement factories. And so we're trying to bridge that end-to-end gap to understand, okay, how does a supply chain for, say, cement work, or a supply chain for a supermarket work, or how does a supply chain for an automotive company work, right? So that's where most of our work is, the ability to map it using existing data that exists in any sort of ERP system, and being able to take that map and understand how it changes over time, and communicate the value in terms of improvement in working capital, even earnings per share, the CEO of a Fortune 500 company to say, if we improve our supply chain using the existing data and what we predict will be the next big things that are about to happen, this is how we can get through some of these disruptions, right? So that's really what we're working on, taking that data up to the C-suite and talking about how the material flow actually is tied to the free cash flow of the company.
Okay. And can you speak to any examples of problems that customers have had that you've managed to resolve for them?
Yeah, absolutely. So we just sat down with the CIO of Progressive Cement and the head of Microsoft's worldwide, he's the director of supply chain retail on the Azure cloud, right? And so, as you know, the biggest problem right now in supply chains is not really the bottleneck. It's the way we see it. The big problem is that products that don't sell predictably result in a lot of stockpiling and additional cost on the supply chain side. But the even bigger problem is if you're an industry that's going through a boom, like maritime or cement or semiconductor, right? The bigger problem is that in order to move products that are in demand, CFOs end up spending money on capital expenditures like trucks, like injection molding machines, like new warehousing. And so the problem on that side is sometimes you can't get that equipment in country. So even if you have a big boom in your side of the business or industry, if you can't get the machine to make it, you're not going to fulfill it. So we ran into this challenge with this company, and they were looking to buy a large amount of trucks to move more cement from all the way down their supply chain. And so we basically came in and said, well, okay, you want to buy trucks, but there's a backup of a year or two from these truck suppliers, right? Because you can't get trucks right now. And so what is the best opportunity here for you guys to deliver and make more contribution margin might be to look at your sales and purchase order data and figure out what you're actually selling versus just trying to push and it's making contribution margins and helping your business rather than just buying all these trucks, right? So by doing that, we significantly improved their profitability. We got rid of dozens of truck purchases, right? And we sped up the supply chain because they ended up moving what is actually selling and making money versus just moving their entire product line. So those are sort of the problems that we've been working on, right? We've been showing customers that if you can sense the actual demand and what products are actually needed at that endpoint using data, and be more selective about what you're allowing to go through your supply chain at the right time of the year, You don't have to buy trucks and new factories and all that. You already have the right amount of capacity. You just have a lot of waste in the system. And cement, coincidentally, is the third largest source of emissions behind the United States and China. So yeah, it's a big ESG CO2 play as well.
Right. And how native do you think people are these days with the concept of data? A lot of people talk about the importance of data, but, you know, down in the trenches of supply chain, how many people are familiar with working with data?
I think it's a culture thing in big corporations. So if you think about the top 1 or 2% of supply chains, right, they got there because they leverage data very effectively. So whether you think about the big Amazons and the Dells of the world, like they are very, very meticulous, or even the Toyotas, right? They were very meticulous about their process. Unfortunately, on the operations side, there isn't much adoption elsewhere. So while the IT world, and I've been fortunate enough to live in the IT world, OT world, operations world, and the financial world, right? What I've noticed is on operations, they know that the data exists, but they see it as something that supply chain and procurement take care of, right? It's not their problem. They just expect to get their parts on time to keep going. So not a lot of adoption on the operation side. On the IT side, it seems like the world is run on data, but that's just the IT bubble. And on the financial side, the data that they're looking for is all financially related. So the concern is not as much as what's going on at the ground level. It's just like, how are the numbers working out at the end of the day? So I think it's still pockets and perceptions. That's how I like to look at it. But in operations, it's not a lot of adoption. I think the operations decision makers would like more data now to understand that holistic picture of what's going on in the supply chain, right? I think we've moved beyond the self-centric part of saying, hey, as long as I get my stuff, I'm okay, who cares? In pretty much a hyper-connected supply chain globally now, this is something new, right? That people are realizing that I have to care about the two steps before me, and I need to understand through a report or some sort of data what my lead times could be, what the quality might be looking like, or if it's blocked somewhere.
Okay. And in terms of the supply chain in general, what kind of level of preparedness are supply chains at in terms of innovation?
Planning and preparedness is one of those things, right, where you have all the scenarios planned out, and then that, when that one scenario happens that you never thought of, right, all the plan goes out the window, right? So I think it's been different. So if you operate in operations like where I used to operate, like Pakistan, Yemen, right? We used to build out very elaborate crisis management plans, right? We would think about every scenario that could get wrong, and then we would manage the risk, right? Now, we knew the risk of operating in those environments required that, because it had people on the line besides the business and so forth. So it's very serious. I think it's been a mix. I think in the certain countries have been very, very reactive, right? And now they're looking at saying, hey, let's be more prepared. So for example, I'm at MODEX this week, right, in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. So I'm seeing a lot more people now there. I mean, it's a lot of people, of course, but a lot more robotics plays, a lot more automation plays. I'm looking at companies and vendors, and they're looking to collaborate to say, okay, we need to be prepared for the next one around. But in terms of what happened, there weren't that many companies that were prepared for it. But keep in mind, their systems are their systems, right? So if someone had run simulations or had said, hey, if this happens, what do we do? They would have been prepared for this. So that's, I think, the takeaway that many people had never saw this coming. And, you know, you cannot blame them, because this is something that happens maybe one every 100 years, right? But there's always the people who did spend the time to come up with contingency plans and operate. I think they did okay during the pandemic.
And there are going to be more of these kind of shocks to the system, aren't there? Because even if we just look at some of the repercussions of the current war, the lack of neon, because 90% of industrial grade neon comes from Ukraine, and neon is used in the manufacture of semiconductors. So the semiconductor issue is going to probably get worse. Food is another one, food security, because Russia and Ukraine are responsible for large amounts of the grain crops that feed a lot of North Africa, for example, in the Middle East. So I can see civil unrest, potential civil wars happening in that region in the next 12 months. And climate change is another huge one that's going to, I mean, we saw floods in Europe last year. We saw droughts. We saw wildfires. All these kind of things are going to have impacts as well. So the requirement for planning and contingencies is only increasing, no?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is the whole concept of supply chain resiliency, right? I think many people are looking for their what I call plan B systems, right? Because the planning systems are the plan A systems where everything is sort of baked in. And what we are seeing more of is companies are now looking at different scenario planning systems, right? I talk to a lot of companies, and regardless of what we provide at Throughput, often it defaults back to, well, can you do scenario planning, right?
Right.
So there's an infinite amount of scenarios. What we get the customer to realize is that, look, based off of your capabilities, even if that happened, you're not going to be able to fulfill it, right? So if you've never done it before, you're not prepared for it, right? So there's nothing you can do from that perspective. So we are seeing more of that, but we are communicating to our customers that you have to understand your own ground realities first, right? That this is what you have to be content with in terms of if it happens, it was outside of your norm to begin with. There's nothing you could have done. I think that brings a lot of confidence or just assurance, right? Saying that, look, we have enough plans in place to execute to what we're capable of, but it's going to continue, right? The best we can do right now is look at some of the data and predict how frequently an event like that might occur. We won't know what the event is, but like you said, because these are happening more frequently, the data is now starting to show that, okay, we pretty much have 3 to 5 of these big events that happen yearly. And in the case that happens, how are we planned to deal with at least 3 to 5 shocks a year from a personnel perspective, from stuff that we can control? So I think just like data and any sort of mathematical modeling, there's stuff that you can control and there's stuff that you can't control, yeah. Right? And you need to focus on stuff you can control, like variable costs, hours of operations, suppliers, right? So, and one of the sides of our business, and this comes back to predictive replenishment, we are now starting to get into, well, what is the deadline to get something air freighted from this vendor? And what is the deadline to switch the vendor, right? To go to vendor B and say that, you know, at this stage, 99%, these guys are not getting us copper, right? So who is the other vendor that we can go for? And then, of course, a lot of this effort is being translated into reshoring in America, right? Which is, okay, our tier one, tier two was in Taiwan. Can we find an equivalent that might not be exactly what we want, but it's a different sort of material that we can use in the meantime, right? So I think that's what we're looking at, which is plan B's, plan C's that typically were not looked at before.
Right. Okay. Very good. We are coming towards the end of the podcast now, Ali. Is there any question I have not asked that you wish I did, or any aspect of this that we've not gone into that you think it's important for people to think about?
Yeah, I think one of the aspects we probably could have got into is just understanding what's out there in the market to help. Because right now, anytime what happens is whenever problems arise in any business, right, or any market, there's a plethora of solutions that just flood the market, mm-hmm. right? And so I think maybe some questions around that might help the audience understand how to pick the right tools, who to go with, right? Can be done, what can't be done, what's a bit pie in the sky, what actually works. I think that's one of the things that people in the podcast could benefit from.
Do you want to get into some of that now?
Well, where do I start? I guess there's so many solutions that are now flooding, saying we will solve your supply chain problems, right? But fundamentally, I think the key is to understand what are you selling and what are you providing, and look at your gaps in terms of where you don't see the bottlenecks in your supply chain or the constraints, right? Softwares that help you realize that from an end-to-end perspective, understand the impact to working capital, and build that story at the strategy level and at the organization level to communicate that, hey, this is who we are as a company or as a supply chain, right? From the beginning to the end, and this is what we control and what we don't control, are good softwares, right, that give you the big picture. I think the biggest challenge I see in the market is everyone is trying to solve one specific problem in one specific location. Well, I take that back. There are solutions that solve that end-to-end problem, but most of the market is filled with, hey, we do AI for retail, or we do planning for manufacturing, or you know, job shop optimization. Solutions that customers should be looking for ultimately need to be able to address the material flow and the cash flow side of the things, because both are very important, especially with inflation. And, you know, people are not realizing how expensive fuel is right now to operate a business until the controllers tell them that, you know, we're not making any margin. So I think the best solutions in the market that I'm seeing are giving you a ground realities check, allowing you to do some sort of scenario planning. But more importantly, they're creating this bridge between the actual operations and the financial owners to communicate that this is what we need to keep our end customers happy and profitable and keep the business and people intact. So if you're looking for solutions that do that, I think you're looking for the right thing in the market. If you're looking to solve a very specific problem to your very specific silo, you're not really helping the overall supply chain, or you might not be, unless you're increasing throughput by doing so at that specific point place, and that place is the actual bottleneck of your supply chain.
Very good. Very good. Ali, that's been great. If people want to know more about yourself or about throughput or any of the things we discussed in the conversation today, where would you have me direct them?
Yep. So you can visit throughput.ai. If you Google throughput now, we show up on the first page of SEO, right? Thanks nice. To our marketing team. And if you need to reach me, Ali at throughput.ai, pretty simple, or just find me on LinkedIn. And again, thank you for hosting us on this podcast today. And we're always available to talk supply chains and help customers solve their problems.
Phenomenal. Great. Ali, that's been really interesting. Thanks a million for coming on the podcast today.
Thank you, Tom.
Okay, we've come to the end of the show. Thanks everyone for listening. If you'd like to know more about digital supply chains, head on over to sap.com/digital supply chain or simply drop me an email to tom.raftery@sap.com. If you like the show, please don't forget to subscribe to it in your podcast application of choice to get new episodes as soon as they're published. Also, please don't forget to rate and review the podcast. It really does help new people to find the show. Thanks. Catch you all next time.